Then outspake brave Horatius, the captain of the gate, to every man upon this earth, death cometh soon or late. And how can a man die better than facing fearful odds for the ashes of his fathers and the temples of his gods? Lord Macaulay, you are listening to the Arteburn radio transmission.
All right, folks, welcome to the Arteburn radio transmission. It is Monday. It's the 8th of August, 2022. Send out a special happy birthday to my brother, Andrew. Never forget his birthday. I remember one year, the media, I think this was like 2019, Chris, the media was going just apoplectic because Trump flew a flag at full mast on 8/8, and they're like, 8/8 is HH, which means Heil Hitler. Did you? But this was like the mainstream media. I was going, this is what kind of clown show is this? Well, I had no idea that it got clownier, it got weirder, it got dumber. But we got a lot of things to talk about. I brought on Chris Graves with me today. I told you folks I would be here 2 p.m. Central Time, Mondays and Fridays, for the Arteburn radio transmission, so we could break down some news. You know, the word news, supposedly, and I like to believe this, Chris, that the word news comes from north, east, west, and south. That's where that came together, because it means the lay of the land, and that's what we do here at Art. It's been a newsy show. I've also got Chris joining me this evening. We're going to finish up our recording for Paratruther on 1979. You guys are going to want to hear that show. It's a hodgepodge of a lot of different subject matter and conspiracy and the truth movement, alternative media. It's a good show, and I look forward to getting that finished. All right, well, we'll jump into some headlines, Chris. The first thing that I saw today, you know, I was pulling up some economic news. But I noticed, sad, out of the world of history, this is De News, link on Drudge. David McCullough, the best-selling author and explorer of America's past, dies at 89. And I'll never forget, my dad had a copy of David McCullough's Truman, which is like a 1,000-page book, when I was a kid. And I thought, wow, I'm going to read that someday. And when I went to Iraq, I was going into the invasion, right? We were staged in Kuwait. I read the entire book waiting to go into Iraq of David McCullough's Truman, which was a great gateway book into American history, which led me to John Adams and his book 1776. He also wrote a book about Theodore Roosevelt's childhood called Mornings on Horseback. And that's where you learn a lot about the psychology of Teddy Roosevelt, which I always found fascinating. Apparently, Teddy Roosevelt had asthma as a little kid, but he would only get him on Sundays. And if his dad would be the mechanism in which he would be able to undo that, like he would and I guess it had something to do. It was psychological, is what McCullough was bringing up about Teddy Roosevelt. But I was always fascinated with David McCullough. I thought he had a great work ethic, and his work isn't perfect, like no historian is. And he's one of the old throwback historians, you know, that I think he put as much detail in his book as possible. But they were great. They were great books to get you started. It's not the kind of history I read now, because if I'm reading history, as you know, I'm going to dig into something a little bit more conspiratorial, a little bit more, less accepted by the establishment, but maybe more researched. Maybe not so much more researched than McCullough, but McCullough, let's just put it this way. He would omit things, I think, just because they're weird because they don't really tie in with the court historian narrative. And so I'll read a little bit of the article. It's Mr. McCullough won Pulitzer Prizes for two presidential biographies, Truman and John Adams. He received National Book Awards for The Path Between the Seas, The Creation of the Panama Canal. I did not read that one. And Mornings on Horseback, 1981, about the young Theodore Roosevelt and his family. Deep research and lively readability were hallmarks of his books, and so was their tendency to leap off the shelves. Truman topped the New York Times bestseller list for 43 weeks, and John Adams was number one in his first week and has gone through dozens of more printings. So, yeah, sad news there. Lived a long life, 89 years old, but you know, I know that he probably had a few more books left him, at least. But what books brought you into the realm of research, Christoph? I mean, besides our great friend Donald Jeffries, the legend, what books brought you to this kind of line of work, sir, and commentary?
Well, I'd say besides Mr. Jeffries, Donald Jeffries, before that was Behold a Pale Horse by Bill Cooper, Who Killed Kurt Cobain by Max Wallace and Ian Halperin, a lot of UFO books, some Jim Mars, definitely Dave McGowan. I can't say Dave McGowan's name enough, but yeah, he had a Weird Seeds Inside the Canyon, Program to Kill. Yeah, great stuff. The People's History of the United States, Howard Zinn.
Yeah, great book.
Yeah, I'd say that would probably be the foundations of me being interested in a different perspective, maybe a more factual perspective, if you will. Because yeah, I noticed when you were reading that gentleman's work, you don't win the type of awards that he got, you know, writing the type of books that we really look at, you know, and cherish.
and I walk a fine line by, because you don't want to throw those. I mean, I read those books and I thoroughly enjoyed them. But what all of the court historians that I read, and this isn't a knock against Mr. McCullough, but they led me to ask more questions that led me to different books, to different genre. And, you know, you look at somebody like Gore Vidal, who is one of my heroes, and regardless of his politics, I mean, I think he was a fantastic thinker. But he subscribed to what they call the conspiracy theory of history. He's that famous quote, "I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm a conspiracy analyst." But what the thing about Vidal, he was so connected to the elite. You know, his dad worked for FDR and was, you know, part of the aviation, the big part of the push of the, you know, what would become the Air Force and the FAA and all of that. He, you know, his dad dated Amelia Earhart. I mean, he was tied in. His grandfather was, his last name was Gore, and he was a senator from Oklahoma who was blind, but it was a big anti-war guy. So, you know, he got to see up close and personal how things were done. And he joked about being the official biographer of the United States of America, because if you read Vidal's fiction, it goes from the beginning of the country in a biography of, not a biography, but it's a book called Burr about Aaron Burr. And it ends with empire. Like, it goes from Republic to empire, all his books. And it's a big, you know, narrative history, but fiction. So I've always enjoyed that. And, you know, again, Vidal kind of crosses into the realm of where we are. You know, I think towards the end of his life, he was questioning the,
but he would only go so far, though, right? Because didn't he change his position? Which is, you know, if that's how you feel and you have the facts and everything, that's fine. I'm not criticizing anyone for changing their viewpoint. But was it Gore Vidal that changed his views on the September 11th attacks and said that it was not an inside job? No, or
he said he didn't know. And well, because at the time people were saying, so you're saying that George Bush planned this and did it? And he was like, I don't know. And right, I think that's where he went. He was like, I have no idea. I don't think they're really capable of doing things. So I think he was trying to leave it an open question. Okay. But I think at the end of the day, I don't think he bought that, you know, people with box cutters that, you know, right, can take over U.S. airspace. And I don't think he bought that
$1 trillion defense.
Yeah. And they just happen to know when we're running all of our drills and Able Danger and Vigilant Guardian, and they can shut down NORAD and do a stand down order. Can people with box cutters do that?
Right.
Nobody's perfect, but it leads you to other books. I mean, I got a couple of Dave McCullough books here on my shelf, and ones that I read when I was a soldier in Iraq. I'll read this little excerpt from some of his take on Jefferson and Adams. It says, Jefferson was devoted to the ideal of improving mankind, but had comparatively little interest in people in particular. Mr. McCullough wrote, Adams was not inclined to believe mankind improvable, but was certain it was important that human nature be understood. And I love the back and forth that McCullough covered between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. It's really beautiful history, the friendship they had at the end of their life. They died on the same day. They died on July 4th, exactly 50 years to the day of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. So I think I talked about that on July 4th here on the show. But just to open up the show, talk a little bit of history. I was always, you know, I'm always interested in people that I work with, like what led you to this? Because it'd be hard for somebody with no foundation in study to just jump into this. Now I know people do, and God love them. I wish them all the best, but it takes me pulling years of research and reading and thought into doing each show. I mean, I don't know if anybody notices it. I hope they do. I have to pull, you know, when I read a headline, I'm like, well, here's what this could mean based off everything I've ever, you know, understood to be real, which I leave.
Well, it shows that you're not just pulling it out of nowhere either, you know?
Yeah. Makes it harder, but you know, you start with the basics and then, you know, and then that leads you to Donald Jeffries. It leads you to James Perloff, you know, and of course, Bill Cooper And I mean, even some of my friends, I mean, Charlie Robinson has magnificent work on the history of conspiracy, the history of what I believe is our actual reality. And that's the octopus of global control. And he did the controlled demolition of the American empire. These are people that I want to be around. You know, these are thoughtful people and researchers. And again,
that,
you know,
that actually reminds me when you said the title of his book, that brings me back to the late Jim Keith. He co-wrote a book about the octopus too, and it went into Danny Casolaro's murder. A lot of people think he was murdered, and he was looking into the it was in the early 90s. You know who I'm talking about? Danny Casolaro.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think you talked about this before, but not on air.
Oh, did we? Okay. Yeah. It just reminded me of that because he was looking into the octopus too, but then he died very conveniently, you know, in a bathtub in a motel room.
And Charlie's mentioned that too. When I think he's talked about the same incident, same author, and then having the similar title. So
I mean, that's just what that particular conspiracy was referred to as, you know, back in the day, the octopus with all the different tentacles and the, you know, poppy bush and all that, and Cheney back then, Iran-Contra. I think it was all connected. But
well, it's like, you know, when you get into something like Anthony Sutton, like how mind-blowing is that? I can't believe it took me all those years to find him. You know, I wish I'd have been reading Anthony Sutton and Gary Allen like in my teenage years, which I didn't. I was reading. But I was reading court historians. I mean, I've talked about this many times, and I'm glad that I read those books. But wow, what you can skip ahead a bunch if you just go. And that's the thing is, like, you won't find them. You got to find them through research and through asking more and more questions. That, you know, and even if you go into Barnes and Noble, they don't even keep Behold a Pale Horse out on shelves. They keep it behind the counter. It's the most stolen, like the hidden, book, right?
Yeah. There's something punk rock about that, in my opinion, you know?
Oh, I'd much rather be. See, this thing is, I'd much rather be doing what I do. And we were talking, Chris and I were talking off air, and just the type of broadcaster that I've always wanted to be. And I'm like, I'm where I want to be. But it's not always popular, if ever, you know, just because I love what I'm talking about, right? It's like, I know what to say. Yeah, it's always really frustrating because as a marketer, I'm like, man, I should go get a bunch more listeners. But I can't because I can't.
You know, sell your soul.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't do it. You know, it's in the age of Trump, that's really hard too, because that's what people want to hear. You know, they want to hear about that and how great that is. And I'm like, it's not. Sorry, it's not what I believe. So, yeah, if I was a listener, I'd probably be listening to the. It's just me, but I'm kind of a contrarian. I think I'd be listening to the guy who would forego the money, you know, forego the thumbs up. But that's just me. All right, let's jump into some headlines. These are the kind of stories that I didn't run this by you first, Chris, but have you heard of the Inflation Reduction Act?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah. So
they're going to print some trillions. Okay. They're going to get the printing press going again, ladies and gentlemen, to help you with your inflation problem. It's like, hey, I got a fire problem. Well, here's a 50 gallon drum of gasoline. Here, we're going to really help you, sir. With
the Patriot Act is very patriotic, you know,
right?
It's one of those ironic names.
And that's what I always tell people. The Patriot Act was designed to target patriots, just so you know.
Yeah.
This is ZeroHedge.com. Here are the winners and losers in the Inflation Reduction Act. As Democrats pat themselves on the back after the Senate finally passed the massive tax, climate, and health care bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, which Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called one of the most significant pieces of legislation passed in a decade. Bloomberg has compiled a list of winners and losers. I love how even Bloomberg, you know, the spawn of Mike Bloomberg, who's I mean, one of the worst political candidates in the history of ever. But even they are getting this. Like, here's the winners. The wealthy. Not only did one of the billions in tax increases Democrats threatened high earners with last year make it into the final version of the bill, their plans to tax the 1% turned out to be nothing more than a big virtue signal. Yeah. None of the billions in tax increases made it. Well, you know, again, and I have mixed feelings on that because I'm like, why are you really even taxing people if you're just going to print more money? I mean, if you're going to print more currency, then what's the point of taxes?
Right.
Here's another winner, private equity fund managers. As we noted on Friday, the landmark bill only passed after Arizona Senator Kristen Sinema insisted on keeping the carried interest loophole that allows investment managers like her former bosses to shield the majority of their income from higher taxes. The private equity industry was able to gain an additional win shortly before the final passage of the bill when a handful of Democrats broke with their party to vote on a Republican amendment that covered a carve out of private equity owned companies in the corporate minimum tax. Manchin and Sinema were big winners after having held their party hostage for more than a year over the legislation. The entire contents of the bill were essentially cherry picked by Manchin and then tweaked to fit Sinema's preferences. The two were also able to score direct benefits from their states, with Manchin securing an agreement to permit the completion of the Equitrans. What is that? Equitrans. Midstream yeah. Corp, Mountain Valley Pipeline, and Sinema, who was able to secure $4 billion in drought relief. Oh, here's another winner. The IRS and the Green Agenda. The bill will give $80 billion to the IRS over the next 10 years to expand its audit capabilities, as well as a bevy of technological upgrades.
So to expand its way of screwing us more.
I mean, you hired a new army.
Yeah.
You know, and I ask again, and I think this should be asked again and again. If you just create new currency to pay for these things, these programs, to shell out and to all your Wall Street criminal friends get bailed out when you shut the country down, what is the point of the income tax? Because the income, it was always supposed to be like, well, we don't have enough revenue. A tax has to be revenue neutral. Like, we have to be able to pull enough taxes to pay for the government. Now they don't even. Those two things aren't even like in the same sense. Like, they're not even the same bills or line of logic. Nobody talks about that anymore. And I think, I think I'm asking a rhetorical question. I already know. So the thing is, they use, for those of you who don't know, the 16th Amendment of the Constitution was put and ratified in 1913, just before they did the Federal Reserve. And the reason they did that is so that the giant money houses, the banking institutions, the trusts, the foundations, exempted themselves first and then made everybody else a tax slave that could never compete with them again. And every time you hear a brain dead person on the left, mostly on the left, talking about raising taxes, they just seem, that seems to go over them that the entire concept was born out of the wealthiest people.
Yeah.
That to make sure that there's no, so they are taxing people on behalf of the wealthy. Right. Can we agree? I mean, that line of logic. Do you see what I'm getting at, Chris? I mean, they literally use the wealthy use the IRS to make sure there's no competition for.
Right. And it's been like that, like you said, like even before 1913, I believe. But that just that was like another level. You know, 1913 is another one of those years, I think. A bunch of different things happened.
I was talking to Mr. Anderson, and he said that we should do 1913 next. And I thought, well, let's get through 79, because I've been telling people we got this thing coming. It's going to drop. And then it's like we're doing a new concept on Paratruther, folks, where I'm like, let's take years and then see, because I am a big believer in timelines, like certain years, certain sequences of time have a big impact on current reality. And some years more than others, right? And I think we can agree on that. Some things are pivotal years, and 79 was the first one I thought of because of my conversation with James Perloff. But we've also got 1913, 1941.
47, 54.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
Yes. So we've got a ton to work on, so that's going to be a great project. Here's a tweet from Tom Cotton. 87,000 new IRS agents, higher taxes, and a massive green energy slush fund. Anyone who says this bill reduces inflation is lying. Well, I mean, just by definition, though, Tom, I mean, if you we don't have $80 billion. We don't have the funds that are in the bill that fund the bill. You have to create new currency from the Federal Reserve. You have to borrow it, put that into circulation. So by definition, that will increase inflation.
I know. I
don't know. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't get people to understand that we would have, so this is how you could reduce inflation. You start bringing the troops home.
Yeah.
You cancel the foreign policy of empire.
More foreign aid.
Well, if you've got the troops that are in South Korea, you put them on the border of South Texas, because that's a more important border. Mm-hmm. That's number one. World War II ended in 1945, so you can bring the troops home from Europe. Cold War ended when I was 10 years old, so we can stop fighting Russia now. And all the little wokies with their Ukrainian flags waiting for the current thing will be very disappointed, but we won't have inflation because you could bring home the empire. We have like 172 bases, or no, it's 700. I always get this wrong because it's 700 bases in 130.
Up to 700 now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something like that. And that's back during the time of Ron Paul. So it's probably like 725 now.
That's empire stuff. Yeah,
that's empire. So we could bring the troops home. You could do a massive reduction in spending. You know, you could
open up factories again.
What's that?
Open up factories here again.
Yeah. What you do is you could say, okay, we don't have an income tax anymore. We'll have an across the board sales tax. So everybody has to pay, whether you're, you know, the CEO of a major corporation or just the regular person, you pay a tax. Everybody.
You know, and the more you buy, the more taxes you pay. And if you don't want to buy a lot of things, then you don't have to pay more taxes.
Ta-da.
Seems fair, but
we just solved inflation, folks.
All right. What else can we solve?
And another thing too, what you would do is eventually, once you kind of got a little bit of equilibrium, you'd say, okay, well, we're going to back our currency with gold and silver, like a bimetal thing, like we used to do. But then every bill, everything that goes before Congress would actually have to, you have to go through it with a fine tooth comb, and everything would have to be approved. Like, there wouldn't be any more pork. Like, we didn't really have the kind of giant bloated spending bills in the 19th century,
right?
Because we had a gold and silver standard, and then you couldn't get away with it. There'd have to be so much in the treasury, right, and you couldn't just go borrow it, and you couldn't. So, but I'm wishful thinking. So yeah, the answer to, you know, like if you want to rid your house of termites, you don't put more termites in it.
No,
it's just
it's true.
The inflation reduction.
Logic, I don't know if that's allowed these days.
Well, there's a reason why I didn't win my race for Congress. It's like, it's the story of my life. Yeah. I'm not going to say things that are wrong just to make people like them. Right. Here's some of the losers. Republicans. Republicans who thought Manchin and Sinema wouldn't cave on their promises to raise taxes during a recession. The GOP why are the Republic the most gullible political faction in the history of mankind?
Don says they're the dumbest, and the Democrats are the most evil or something.
I think that goes back to John Stuart Mill, and he said there's two types of political parties. He's talking about England. He was like, there's the dangerous party and the stupid party.
All right. So Donald Jeffries updated it.
I like the Donald Jeffries one better. I think that comes from John Stuart Mill.
And honest, I think they're both the same. I don't think there is a left or a right, but that's for a different thing.
I agree with you. I think more than just about anything, I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Nomad Above and Beyond tipped us $5 on Rockfin. I really appreciate that. That's very kind. Every time I look in the chat, I'm like, somebody tipped the show. I really appreciate that. And we'll put it to good use. I promise you that. Other losers include tech companies that will bear the brunt of two major tax increases in the bill, a 15% minimum tax on financial statement profits, and a new levy on stock buybacks, and which have allowed companies like Alphabet's Google and Meta's Facebook to minimize their tax burden over the years. Well, cry me a river.
Yeah.
SALT, the ability to deduct state and local taxes. That's what SALT stands for. More like assault. The ability to deduct state and local taxes, a $10,000 cap, which coastal Democrats were hoping to repeal. Bernie Sanders was a big loser, who Bloomberg notes wanted $6 trillion in spending, making the $437 billion in new spending a far cry from success. He wanted $6 trillion in spending. You realize the budget of the United States in the year 2000, when George W. Bush was elected, supposedly. He was elected by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Scalia made, that was the, we'll have to cover, we need to do the year 2000 too, because that whole thing, how it ended, that is bizarre.
But yeah, everyone thought Y2K was going to be the end. No, it was the year after, about a year and a half later.
It was a delayed effect, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the entire debt of the United States in the year 2000, Chris, was $5 trillion. So from 1789, you know, the formation of the Constitution, to 2000, we had accumulated $5 trillion. And now it's like 30, 20,
right? 30. It's like 20, 30, okay.
30.
Wow. Yeah.
In the year 2010, it was $10 trillion. In the year 2020, it was over 20.
One asks why. I mean, not us, but I mean, the public at large. Why is that?
It's not. So in school, they never talk about the origins of our money or about finances, because the less that they can teach you, the more that they can manipulate you. And that's just coming from the top down, the Department of Education. Like, don't teach people how to
balance, gain
wealth. Right. Or even balance a checkbook.
Yeah.
Just keep them in the dark. make sure that they can get their student loans as much as you can, because they want you in debt, right? Because then
well,
you
remember to give them a send them a credit card on their 18th birthday and tell them, hey, it's your birthday, spend all you want, and sure, then I'll tell you about interest rates and all this other stuff. I mean, it gets a lot of people in trouble right off the bat. I mean, along with the college loans.
Unlike Congress, you don't have a printing press. Right. Bail you out, right? That's why they can. So I was talking on my show on Friday, and we laugh about this stuff, you know, because it is so clown world. Yeah. But when they do things like what they've done in the last 36 months, and really, you know, my entire life, but really accelerating the printing press.
Yeah.
You're murdering people.
Yeah.
Let's not pull punches. It very kills sad. People. Yeah. And I got to say this again and again and again. When you devalue the currency, people can buy less food, less medicine, people on the fixed incomes, the most vulnerable, you're killing them. You're killing their quality of life. And then all these big companies keep getting bailed out. Why doesn't Bernie Sanders go after, and I know that I'm asking a rhetorical question, why doesn't Bernie Sanders go after sound money? Why doesn't he want to talk about the Fed? He used to hint at doing something with Ron Paul. Now he talks about nothing. He wanted to spend $6 trillion. Yep. So every time they do that, do they realize that the people will need more because you've just devalued the currency now? Is this too big of a concept for people to get? Like, you're literally murdering those who are less able to earn a living. So used to, you could go and take a silver dollar and put it in a coffee can and bury it in the backyard, and you could dig it up in 20 years and it'd be a dollar. It'd buy the same amount of stuff for you as it did 20 years ago. You can't get the same amount of stuff for a dollar from 20, you know, if you go back in time and bring it forward, it's not going to buy. So if you save the dollars, you're already, that's why you have all these financial products and all these things that people are always trying to keep people from not noticing. Like, look, my house went up in value. Look at my how much my house went up in value. It really didn't, though.
No.
Right? That's called inflation. You've lost value in the purchasing power of your dollar. That's called theft. That's right. Robbing people. Yeah. So, like, if you go in somebody's house and you and like an elderly person and you take all their things and they can't afford to afford groceries the next week, and they get, or they can't turn their heating on if they die, yeah, you pretty much kill. That's what this is, what this is, just on a mass scale.
I've known of people that have died this summer from not being able to pay to have the air conditioning turned on. So they really are being murdered. You're literally being murdered. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I've been talking about. Like in an economy in a downturn, that's why I talk about economic setback, but it breaks my heart. I don't want that. It's not going to help anybody except the rich. I'm just telling you what's happening so you can prepare for it, because I don't think when you have people like, look at Bernie, I mean, he's just a definition of sellout. Yep. What does Michael Savage call him? Like the seltzer man, the seltzer, like an old seltzer man from the Bronx. I forget what it was.
Well, he didn't even fight. It was like with Clinton. John Kerry and all that. Like, he didn't even fight the when they just gave it to Hillary, right?
Not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just took and he ran again.
That's what I mean.
Both. Sure, he'll be ready to go again and get some more donations. I need a fifth house. Bloomberg notes he wanted $6 trillion spending, and then they didn't get the $437 billion. And he got, you know, they got that. But excluded from the bill is all proposals for new social programs, including tuition-free college, child care, housing spending, and expanded child monthly tax credit. Well,
they never want to audit the Fed. Same with Elizabeth Warren. I think the same thing. You know, she hinted at possibly going that route and then never came up again.
I mean, philosophically, why is it that socialists don't understand that their goals are the same goals as the rich? I always feel like I'm on a strange planet. Like, they did not know this. It's so evident, because they look at ESG. There was an article up on summit.news about environmental social governance with things like BlackRock and these central banks, you know, using and basically putting downward pressure on corporations to make woke decisions, environmental social governance. And it's not about profit. They're literally remaking the landscape for what these people consider capitalism. It's not capitalism. They have the same goals. that should be a red flag for you. Like when rich, super rich people have the same goals as you, there's something wrong. Like universal basic income, tuition-free college, these are goals of the rich. I don't know. I mean, it's not goals of the middle class, because we realize that in that environment, it'd be harder for you to get upward mobility.
Right.
I don't know why this, I don't know why this is so challenging, but yeah. there's the winners and losers. The winners are the IRS and the rich, and the losers is Bernie and the GOP. That sounds about.
And the real losers, unfortunately, are all of us.
All of us. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we didn't even take a break today. I guess we don't. When we're talking to Chris Graves, we don't even need a commercial break. I'll try to do spot prices today too on metals. It's a busy day at the shop. I've been getting back on emails and placing some trades and making sure I was going to clear all my orders out today. That's my goal before we finish recording Paratruthers, to get every single outstanding order out. All right, let's see. We've got summit.news. Here's one for you, Chris. You'll shower less and you'll be happy.
And you'll like it. Yeah, great. What about your neighbors and your loved ones?
This is a clip from Paul Joseph Watson. I thought it was going to be a link, but I know that they're water rationing. The UK.
And they want you to eat people too. Remember last week?
Yes. Eat people and
drink less water.
Well, there was one that was Spain. Let's see. This is one from Spain. Kind of the same thing that, you know, I talked about this on Friday's show. Spain bans air conditioning dropping below 27 degrees Celsius, which I believe is 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Yeah.
New government decree. There's your government. And, you know, more socialism. That's what we need. But it's all about austerity. This is a planned, this is creative destruction, where they come in and they just start ripping apart quality of life, and they're going to blame it on external things, but it's just them doing it. It's all about reshaping. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I know you had a couple more.
They don't want us to own automobiles either by 2030, I think. Right. You got that memo, right?
Oh, right. And they have no grid for you to park your electric cars on. They were talking about that. Thomas Massey was grilling Pete Buttigieg on that. He was like, so could every household in America add 25 new refrigerators? Because that's what it would take to charge the electric vehicles. Right. You don't have the grid for that. And all the grids are burning fossil fuels. I don't believe in that term anymore, by the way, just for the record. But I use that because that's what people think of. I don't think they're fossils. I don't think that they come from dinosaurs.
The late Michael Rupert used to push the finite, you know, oil supply. I remember that.
I don't believe in peak oil.
That's what I was trying to remember the actual term. Yeah, he used to push that.
I don't believe in peak oil. I think that there's a big chance that oil is a naturally occurring phenomenon. Yep. Like a byproduct of the tectonic shifts in the earth itself. And over time, because they've shown where wells have actually come back, they've gone back to them, and they've, you know, the pool refills after a certain amount of time. It's not something you could get, you know, you'd want to have something renewable. You wouldn't want it's not something you can just turn a spigot on forever, but I don't believe in peak oil. Like we'll just reach a certain amount of oil and won't have any.
Yeah,
I think that's a ruse of the highest order. I was looking for, I know you sent me some links too, and I had one more that I wanted to get to. I probably got enough time to cover it, but I was looking for something that was in the links.
I'm trying to find some real juicy ones, and, you know, some of it's just kind of like, oh, you're getting screwed kind of deal, you know?
Well, some of it's stuff I didn't want to cover, you know, like this one about the U.S. military host drag shows.
Was that one of my links?
No, it was something that Paul Joseph Watson put up. And I don't even know what to. I mean, I'm a veteran, and I just look at them like, well, you know, I saw this. They had a drag show in a church, multiple churches hosting drag shows. And I'm just wondering, what is it about? Like, what is that in the terms of equality or accepting people? Why is someone. Why is a man dressing up as like a trashy woman?
Yeah, not even a regular woman. Yeah,
not even a regular, but like a caricature of you know, like a woman who just climbed out of a dumpster. Like, what? Why is that? Why is that a something to be celebrated? I mean, should you have pride for things that are just weird? Like, I mean, I don't know. That's where
I don't know.
There's a lot of things about me I'm not proud of. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a, I don't know. And it's a moot question.
An odd one, especially when they want them to visit the children. You know, I saw that article too.
Yeah. And they just like the elementary school. Them up. Like they're just all offering them up. Like, oh, you know, yeah. It's just weird.
I'm like, okay, that's not odd at all.
I always feel like this is a simulation or something when I see stuff like this, because it makes absolutely no, like in the military, like in the combat roles and then like in the airborne and stuff, like you would have, like this would be the stuff that you would just roll your eyes and, you know, you would poke fun at the other guy for, I mean, obviously no one wants to stop anybody from having whatever life they want to have, but is everything right. supposed to be celebrated? Do I have to celebrate everything? Every aspect of your life? And this is a family show, so I can't really get into, but I mean, am I supposed to celebrate every aspect of everything that you are? I think there's a difference between accepting and celebrating.
You didn't get the memo?
Apparently, yeah.
Well, now they're condoning cannibalism, so.
Well, I guess that's true, Chris.
I don't know where this goes, Tony.
Well, there's your picture. The U.S. military host drag show encouraged children to attend with bouncy castles and face painting. So, yes, really. The event took place in the U.S. military's joint base in Langley, Eustace, this past weekend, and was promoted by organizers as kid-friendly. The festival included a number of guest speakers and performers, including a drag show by Joshua Kelly, a.k.a. Harpy Daniels, the Navy drag queen. There's a Navy drag queen?
It was for children.
And it's for children. It's, I mean, a person who works at JBLE while wanting to remain anonymous was infuriated that the military had supported the event and marked it as family friendly, given the nature of, and that's the thing is, like, you could have a speaker, you know, when a kid is a certain age, you know, maybe like middle school, and say, "Hi kids, I'm gay," you know, or whatever. I guess that's not, but this is like something else. This is like, I'm also
trying to put on a show. Yeah. It's like if you had like regular strippers, like coming in for the kids, like,
I don't want any of that.
Right.
But it doesn't mean
you hate trans people, you know?
I mean, you're taking kids whose brain and their mind and their spirit is still innocent. I mean, they have yet to experience the nightmare of this existence. I guess I'm not. I'm not.
No, you put that.
I'm sorry.
You put that was a good the way you put that. Yeah, the nightmare. Let them have their childhood first. You know,
it's a waking nightmare. I mean, the more I learn about history and human nature, and I mean, it is, and I've been learning this for years and years, but the more I look at stuff, and just, if you take, you know, you take a child and you're removing their imagination and their innocence and exposing them to all the things that are just gross and horrifying. What kind of future they're not trafficked first.
There's a lot of them, you know, they have unfortunate childhoods, you know.
Well, it's a nightmare. What's the thing I always had a problem with QAnon about is that QAnon was saying, well, the elites are, they got a club and they, you know, the adrenochrome and all this stuff, and they capture kids. And I do believe some of that goes on. Like, I do believe, I know that there's real child sex trafficking. I know that exists.
Right.
But they were saying it like on a level, like every Democrat and all this stuff. I mean, I get what the op was.
Yeah.
But what I kept telling people was, okay, well, I understand you want to stand up for the kids, but you do realize, like, out in the open, like in the news, like, we just bomb children. Like, we just do this like on a daily basis. And a lot of it's celebrated by a many, you know, part of our, you know, commentators in the news, and especially on the right. Like, that makes America great.
But those children weren't American, Tony. It's okay.
They weren't real.
Yeah, it's like they're not human beings. Yeah.
And that's what we do. And then the things like we talk about with inflation and other things, like you're murdering people, but you can't, but since you can't see it, it's sensationalizing. I'm like, so the elite could traffic children in maybe what, 1,000 a year or how many, I don't know, but it's hundreds of thousands
that they do millions. Out in the open. Yeah.
Yeah. Out in the open, you know, and I've seen the devastation. You've seen a child that's been affected by that. I've seen families affected by that. I couldn't speak their language, but I could feel what they were going. It was awful, you know, and you never forget it. You never can walk away from it. I can smell it.
If you can, then you're not human, all right?
Well, then if I could, I'd be a senator. You know, I'd be president.
That was a good one. Yeah, it was good.
I'd be liked. I think I was texting my wife earlier today, and she's like, I listened to somebody on the radio and they were terrible. I'm like, well, tell them to send this tape to the former radio station in Iowa, and they'll give him a drive time as long as he likes war. I get kicked off all these things because I'm like, well, I'm not going to support your war or your guy that supports the war, and then everybody boos. But yeah,
that America, was freedom only costs $1.05 or whatever. Right?
We need to. Does that have a copyright on it?
Probably.
We need to.
Paramount. Yeah.
Oh man, freedom. I was listening that to the other day, just to get a laugh. Freedom cost $1.05. I went. Plus,
I always say that every in my mind, it'll come back. I bet freedom only costs $1.05 or $1.09 or something.
It costs folks like you and me. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting to the end of the show, folks. You never know the chaos of a Chris and Tony show. I've just told Chris, join me on Mondays and we'll roll the dice and see what happens. Always fun. And you know, guys, you guys tune into my Friday shows. Those are a little bit more of Tony sitting down for a couple hours and shifting through some stuff. And then this is, I like to just kind of throw something out and see what happens. But with Chris, because he's my guy. He's my go-to. Naturalnews.com. Spain sprays lethal chemtrails on its population under a UN program to fight COVID.
That's one way to go.
Well, this is what
let's I kill mean. Them first.
I mean, we need to. Let's teach our kids about chemtrails. You know, right after they learn about drag queen story time and the nightmare of adulthood.
Yeah.
We'll teach them about chemtrails, right? Because this is.
Don't drink water, but eat your neighbor.
That's right. Eat your neighbor. let's read about this. Natural News. The Spanish government sprayed lethal chemtrails on its citizens under a United Nations program to fight the coronavirus. Barely a month after the World Health Organization, the WHO, declared a pandemic. Have you noticed, Chris, that the WHO and the UN go together? So it's the UN and the WHO are the pushers of these global agendas. Isn't that interesting?
I just like the idea that if they kill off everyone, then no one will get COVID. Is that the logic here?
I think so. The chemtrail operation was actually authorized by a royal decree on March 14th. Hey, just a day after Trump signed the executive order in 2020, just 3 days after the official announcement of the pandemic. Spain's official state gazette published the order the following day and was acknowledged by Madrid on April 16th, 2020. The UN-backed project was done under the cover of the state of emergency for the management of the health crisis situation caused by COVID-19. That's in quotations, by the way.
Yeah.
Spain's state meteorological agency took part in the biocide spraying operation. The entirety of Spain was locked down to stop the spread. And to facilitate the aerial spraying operations, the Spanish government admits to spraying chemtrails on its citizens. The decree authorized all units under the Spanish armed forces, including military emergency units, to use biocide chemicals approved by the Ministry of Health, MOH, for disinfection in order to deal with the COVID-19 health crisis. You know what else deals with the COVID-19 health crisis? Nothing.
Right.
Sunshine. Drink your water.
Oh, is it vitamin D?
Don't drink a 78-ounce Diet Coke. Right. You know, start with that. Good Lord. It also decreed a state of emergency for the management health crisis situation, which includes a series of measures aimed at protecting the welfare, health and safety of citizens and the containment of the progression of the disease. Salvador Illa, the Spanish health minister, was given the authority to dictate orders to the military for the duration of the health emergency. When I've read this link before, and for those who don't believe in chemtrails, I don't know what to tell you, because literally they're, you can just go out and see them. They're not contrails when they turn into clouds, folks. There's contrails. Planes make contrails. Right. I'm very aware of that. But
that dissipates usually.
One thing I've noticed about, and who knows what they're doing, because the one thing that no one running for office will ever do is look into this.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so
like the Fed.
Go ahead.
No, it's like the Fed, auditing the Fed. It's one of those things. They just won't go near it.
Well, I'm so sick of being told how somebody's, you know, paying, you know, 5,000 degree chess and and I'm being saved, you know, but also they won't do anything about that. I mean, it's.
Yeah. And that John Kennedy Jr. is going to be a VP. Yep.
Right. JK.
We'll I saw the spot where John Kennedy Jr. was killed. He's not alive, folks. Not at all.
You know, okay, so I've been doing this for a while, and I think this is funny. I made somebody laugh the other day. I thought I'd see what I could do if I could make you laugh. But the one conspiracy that I don't believe in is the one where there's people helping. That's the one I don't believe that there's people like, I believe there's good people like where we are that are talking about things. I think there's some good alternative media journalists. I think that there's some lower level, like people at the post office, maybe. I don't know. But like,
I don't know. Have you been in some of those?
I don't know. I'm giving I like my postal lady is great.
Okay.
I need to get her a Christmas present. She's very sweet. She walks up the stairs. I'm just giving a shout out.
Ryan gave me the finger. So, you know, I got you.
So I don't
know. All I asked was what time it was. But yeah.
I mean, I'm willing to accept and look into just about any conspiracy, but that one I won't. I can't do. So sorry about that, folks. I can't.
That one has ops all over it. You know what I mean?
It's just, again, Spain is just one of, and I believe Spain is in NATO, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So this is something I noticed, folks, just happenstance. I follow some accounts on Instagram that all they do is take pictures of chemtrail spraying. And I noticed that there were different countries. And so I started adding up the countries and then seeing who was in NATO, and they were all in NATO. All these European countries, they were also seeing massive amounts of chemtrail activity.
And just remember, weather weapons is not science fiction either. There's actually a treaty banning it from being used in conventional warfare, but not domestically on your own people.
Yeah, and again, 76, and this is like beyond weather. This is saying that they're spraying some like disinfectants or something. Like they're trying to.
Yeah, that's the cover story. Yeah, which is really lame. Yeah,
right. Because they care about your health. The people that brought you nuclear weapons and napalm, they really want you to have
like the fluoride. They care about your teeth. You know,
the fluoride. Yeah, make sure you gargle with it.
They know you're not Russian, so they want to be sure.
It's helping.
They want to make sure that we're not the next England, you know, all the crooked teeth and all the.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's helping.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Well, fun show today. I've appreciate everybody joining us. We've got, I'll shout out the chat real quick. Patrick S. in the chat and Joel Smith. This is good work, guys. Vince Agnelli. Vince, good to see you, my friend. Vince sent me a gift in the mail. He's a good man. And I'm going to send him something too. We're going to exchange things between Wise Wolf and Vince. Let's go over a couple of spot prices real quick for the metals. Had some people walk in the shop earlier and they were wondering like, what's the difference between what you see on the spot price for like silver and then like how much it actually costs? Yeah. And I said, well, that's a great question. Let's see if we can find silver price right now. I used to have like websites, and every website that I follow for prices is somehow down. The price of silver, yeah, it's weird. And all the tickers. The price of silver right now, $20.66. Your cost to get a silver round generic in your hand would be $25.66. Something like that. So just think $5 over spot. So we're not in Kansas anymore. Let's look at gold price. And again, you could reach out to Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. You can go through the website or you can call me and I'll give you a real price in real time. Gold today, 1,787 Luciferian Bankster notes per troy ounce, 1,787 Federal Reserve fiat dollars, LBNs for the yellow metal. Cost today for a 1 ounce gold Britannia from the Royal Mint of England. A great round as long as you don't mind having a 200-year lizard on it. 200-year-old lizard. That would be 1,875 the last time I checked before the show. All right, folks. So we'll be back Friday, 2 p.m. Central Time, another live Arterburn radio transmission. Be checking the podcast feed for Paratruther. It should drop tomorrow if there's not any major editing. The great Chris Graves.
We might have two of them this week, right, Tony?
Maybe. Tell people where they can find you, my friend.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I don't really want to give out the handle just because it's a family friendly, kind of like that stripper show thing. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But I have a show. I have a podcast called Get Mad with Chris Graves. It's not on this network though. So
okay, all right. Well, we'll keep plugging you every week and get you some exposure there. And
thank you, sir.
Folks, you can find me arterburn.news. My last name .news. I've got some links on there to other shows and other things that I do, and you can find out all about me. And also preparewithart.com. That is the landing page set up by My Patriot Supply, and I am convinced that we need to be prepared. So whether you use Prepare with Art or something else, do something, take action, because things are not stable. We'll cover a little bit more foreign policy here at the end of the week, and I've got some news items, maybe a couple of deep dives, but I appreciate everybody tuning in. Always an honor. Beans the Brave in studio gives her best to everybody. I'll put her on the camera next time. And again, thanks to Chris for being here. I appreciate each and every one of you. We'll see you on Friday. End of transmission.
Life is a continuous confrontation with forks in the road. One is good, one is bad. And you could always wander completely off the road altogether and become lost. Totally and completely lost. If you take the wrong fork at one of these junctions, there is always the opportunity at the next fork to get back on track. But it is a constant battle within ourselves. You see, I have studied this concept for many, many years, and I have to tell you that if there is a real devil, like Flip Wilson used to say, the devil made me do it. And I'm not telling you that there's no such thing as Satan or Lucifer. I'm telling you this. If there really is a devil, that devil exists in the hearts and minds of men and nowhere else. Nowhere else. For if you take man out of the equation, evil ceases to exist, and there is left only the laws of the universe and the balance of nature. Put man in the equation, and before long, evil will rear its ugly head and present itself to the world. The evil is within man, and that is why it was called the fall. The devil never made anyone do it. If you do it, you did it yourself because you fell into temptation. For until man once again confronts the real nature of his own condition and of the world around him and accepts full responsibility for his actions without blaming anyone else or any devil, until then, we will always be a puppet on the end of someone else's string. And ladies and gentlemen, when that someone pulls that string, we will dance.